Thank you for attending session 377 titled Infants on Post-Mormon Values. Welcome to the closing evening session for Saturday. Following this session, there will be a linger longer pasta dinner and evening storytelling and music with Elna Baker and Mindy Glithill. Tickets are limited but available for purchase at the registration desk. This session is being recorded and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Just some housekeeping, please silence your cell phones and remain respectful. As you leave us tonight, we want to thank you for all the coming and being part of this Sunstone Symposium. You have now participated in a tradition of Mormon history that is over 40 years old. Mormonism can be what we make it, and your participation helps make Mormonism a little more diverse, interesting, and inclusive. Please support Sunstone by making a donation, subscribing to the magazine, and by attending our regional conference. You are all invited to attend our next regional conference celebrating 500 years of the Reformation in Frankfurt, Germany in September. You can register at sunstone.org. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework so that folks can get out for dinner on time. So a little bit about this presentation. What do values look like after a faith crisis? Without scriptures or prophets or belief in divinity, who is to say what is right or wrong? When the Liahona disappears, what becomes your moral compass? What is the baby? What is the bathwater? The members of the Infants on Thrones podcast will explore these questions with their trademark feature, fearless introspection, unexpected thoughtfulness, and manly humor, or, you know, feminine humor. So to introduce the panel, Glenn Austin began podcasting on Mormon Expressions and then later became a founding member of Infants on Thrones. Bob Caswell served a one-year sentence at BYU before escaping and graduating from UVU, magna cum laude with a degree in business management, and followed by receiving an MBA at Purdue University. Heather Krall is the newest addition to Infants on Thrones, where she offers a point of view steeped in social psychology, behavioral economics, and Russian literature. John Hammer is a historian, and he is also the pastor of the Downtown Toronto Congregation of the Community of Christ. He is a past president of the John Whitmer Historical Association, and he is the co-editor of Scattering of the Saints, Schism Within Mormonism. And Tom Perry has been podcasting for more than 6 years. He was one of the founding members of Mormon Expression and is also one of the founding members of Infants on Thrones. And last but not least, Randy Snyder is a practicing orthodontist in Colorado who got a start in podcasting on Mormon stories where, along with Tyson Jacobson, he was interviewed by Dan Witherspoon regarding atheism and after Mormonism. These are episodes 222 to 227, so please check it out. After that, he appeared multiple times as a panelist on Mormon Expression, which led him to become a founding member of Infants on Thrones. And take it away, panel.
All right, thank you, Josh. So just to introduce this, I'm assuming that everyone in here knows who Infants on Thrones are, is. I don't know the right way to say that.
Show of hands.
Yeah. So anyone who doesn't, we're an amateur podcast. We've been around for 5 years. We average about 13,000 downloads per episode. In our 5 years, we got 4.5 million downloads, which I don't know if that's good or not. Even though we're amateur, we've recently joined Patreon and we started monetizing, which I don't know, it's kind of scary doing that in the Mormon podcasting world, but we've taken that plunge, and we'll have Q&A afterwards, so if anybody wants to ask us about that, we can talk more about it. I think our reputation is maybe for rowdy humor, sometimes being crass, often being irreverent, but hopefully what we say is not without substance. We do general conference parody episodes, and we smack down things like essays from LDS.org, song parodies like the Disney songs for alienated children of gay parents, some of the things I think we're most proud of that we've done. The most common story that we hear from listeners is something like this. I thought I was alone. in the way that I was thinking about the church. We heard you guys. You made us feel like we weren't crazy. You made us laugh during a very dark time, and it's the gospel doctrine class that I always wanted. I really like that kind of feedback when it comes. It's very gratifying. So I say all that to pose the question, then, why is this rowdy group of smart-ass amateur podcasters talking about post-Mormon values? What is that all about? And I think for me, because I was the one that proposed that we do this, there were really two things that happened over the last year that informed this. And the first one is that Donald Trump was elected president. And that, to me, it wasn't quite the same experience as going through a faith crisis when I looked and I saw this Mormon religion that I loved my whole life isn't what I thought it was. But it was a shock, because I thought I had a pretty good read on what was going on in our country, and there was no way that something like this could happen. And so I realized I'm misinformed, I'm wrong, there's something going on that I'm not aware of, and I want to find out what it is. And that led us to, or led me and some of us, reading Jonathan Haidt's The Righteous Mind. We've talked about that on the podcast, and he talks a lot about a moral foundations theory. And the question of why are they divided between things like politics and religion? And so it got us thinking about values and what are the things that we have in common. Is it possible, with all of the echo chambers that are out there, to come together and have a dialogue together? If so, how do we do that? So I think that was probably the first thing that got us thinking, or me thinking about post-Mormon values and what those might be. And then the second one, a few months ago, speaking about monetization in the podcasting world, there was a bit of a kerfuffle in the Mormon, ex-Mormon community. And there were a lot of questions about, is this dividing the post-Mormon community? And I wondered, is there really even such a thing as a post-Mormon community? You know, as Mormons, you know, like it or not, the Mormon Church does an excellent job of creating a social group, because you've got shared beliefs, shared culture, shared values. And once you leave that, or you start challenging, or you start questioning those things, you can feel attacked, maybe, because you're challenging this system, this social group. So I was wondering, much like the case with the echo chambers politically with Trump, are there ways to come together and maybe shared values, even if we reject some of the beliefs or all of the beliefs or some of the culture or all of the culture, are there still values that we have in common that we could explore so that we don't have to burn those bridges between ourselves and family members, friends, people that we love who are still believers? So I think it was those two things that really informed why we wanted to have a panel discussion. There was a third one also. when Heather was joining the podcast, she sent me something like her set of values that were like post-Mormon values, and I always wanted to have a discussion about that. We never really have. So this is kind of an opportunity to at least get a little bit of that and hopefully explore things like that more in the future. Though there was another thing, I'll get to this maybe later. What the format for today, we each came prepared to talk about our top three post-Mormon values, and we're going to start with number three, and we're going to go down the line and spend some time talking about those, and then we'll go number two, and then we'll go number one, and then at the end we'll have some question and answers. But if at any time any of you want to jump in and make a comment, please feel free. Like I read, some people see Infants on Thrones as the gospel doctrine class that they always wanted but never got, so maybe we could have that experience a little bit here today. So maybe we can start, Randy, with you, thinking about your third most important value.
We did this for the top three reasons you left the church, and then at the end, we all realized, when John put the sexism in the church, we all realized he was the only one of the dudes that put sexism as one of the top three reasons. That was a little embarrassing. I mean, sexism is bad, and it's a problem that needs to be dealt with. But number three for me, you know, I'm in leaving the church, going through the faith crisis, I really felt like a dupe. I felt like I had the wool pulled over my eyes, and I'd been deceived. And I can still remember it very clearly. I was living in Phoenix at the time, and I. How much time do we get?
20 minutes.
I'm starting with you, so you.
I'll set the tone.
You can set the tone.
I was driving from Phoenix to a USC football game in like October, and I was all by myself. And I didn't include my older brother. Those of you that listen know that my older brother left the church back in the early 90s and announced to the family he was an atheist. And I was kind of afraid of becoming an atheist, so I didn't include him in my faith crisis until I was done. And for some reason, I was nervous to call him, but I finally called him on that long drive. And, you know, he's read everything, every book that's out there. That's his only hobby, is reading. And he could have introduced me to a number of different things, but the first thing he introduced me to was the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. How many people here listen to that? Boy, not that many. Okay. It's a fantastic podcast. We're proud of having 13,000 downloads. They get like 500,000 downloads an episode. Why did my brother send me to Skeptic's Guide to the Universe? It's because he knew that the epistemology of Mormonism was fundamentally flawed, and he wanted to kind of reboot my brain and get me change the way I approach thinking. And ever since then, I've been like, skeptic is one of my most proud monikers. Above, you know, I'm not that fond of atheist anyway, but it's because it's not just, it's people often conflate skepticism with cynicism, but it's not the same thing. Skepticism is your default position is agnostic until the evidence convinces you. And I think that's a good way to go through life. There's a lot of, I've talked about Gwyneth Paltrow, right? Everyone's familiar with my position on Gwyneth Paltrow. Glenn keeps replaying that because it's his favorite moment ever on the podcast. But there's just, and especially now, it's even more important with fake news and the alternate facts. And the, like when my presentation this morning, fundamentally attacking institutions like science and academia, it's even more important that the message of skepticism gets out there and makes people aware that of the value of taking the time to really evaluate your positions. It spills over into all, I mean, obviously I fail all the time. I talk out of my ass all the time on the podcast, but often, you know, having that value makes me at least self-reflective after the fact and think, well, maybe I need to rethink my position. You know, what is the evidence that, that what I said has any merit? And so skepticism is my number three.
Okay.
I don't know if this actually fits into the category of values or not, but this is one of the things that I've become more acutely aware and developed since my unbelief is being more self-aware and also using meditation as kind of a yin and yang sort of thing. And that's not just because of the ex-Mormon guru thing either. But as I've slowly and really painstakingly tried to get more involved in meditation and just being calm, trying to calm my mind, because, you know, I deal with little mild forms of depression and whatever, that's actually helped. And I guess in a way this could still be if it was while I was still a Mormon, but it only became more intensified after I left, because once I realized that I could be wrong about something so fundamental about my life like that, then everything's up for grabs. And it's like I needed to rebuild from the ground up and really try to analyze every little step that I needed to make from there. And that even included like just me being in a body. What does that mean? Is there free will? You know, just all the real basics of philosophy and So yeah, I would actually strongly encourage anyone to try meditation or yoga or whatever, and because it's really opened a lot of doors for me. So yeah.
All right, my number three. I'm calling it a more post-Mormon value of valuing increasing, ever-increasing perspective. And so when I remember back in like my journal, I'm a visual person, visual learner, and artist, and I draw. And so my visual picture for leaving Mormonism as a teenager, I drew like a box that has inside it all of the facsimile images, you know, from the Book of Abraham and everything like that. And then the lid is lifted and you see all the stars of the universe outside of it, and you didn't realize when you're in the box that you have that. And yet, no matter how smart I thought I was as an 18-year-old, actually, I didn't know anything. my 21-year-old self was an idiot and all the and what he thought he knew. And so then, increasingly, not just deconstructing the initial truth claims and that kind of thing, but actually then the paradigm on which everything is building, you have to actually then also challenge those kind of foundational things and get past those kind of perspectives, see how recently even the just basic questions that the church is all built on, not just its truth claims, but even just the idea that those claims might even be made, are all completely recent in history, and they have no basis going back further than that. So ever increasing, breaking through those little boxes, and there's beyond that star picture that I had when I was 21, then there's more outside of that, and you have to constantly challenge your own paradigm.
So I misunderstood this assignment, and so
you suggested it.
Okay, so Glenn misunderstood this assignment.
I misunderstood her suggestion. We'll go with that.
As you related to others. So I actually have eight because I did the young women's values. So and I had to change several of them. So all the ladies here who went to young women's, as we strive to live the young women values, which are faith, divine nature, individual worth, knowledge, choice and accountability, good works, integrity, and virtue. Hashtag not a cult. Yeah. Very nice.
Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly.
Yeah, exactly. So the first one is faith, and that's something that I don't take with me. I am no longer interested in people who believe something without evidence, which is what I think faith is. So I replace that with purpose. And it doesn't have to be any specific purpose. This comes from Talvin Shazer's work at Harvard on a positive psychology, who says that the twin pillars of happiness are purpose and pleasure. And you need both of them to really be a happy person. So my first value is purpose, whatever that is for you, whether it's your skills, your loved ones, whatever. As long as you have purpose, that's number one. The second one was divine nature, which I have replaced, because divine nature used to be you should draw comfort from the idea that you're a daughter of heavenly parents and that you are, and that tells you where you're going. I had to change this one as well, and I've replaced it with appreciation. I could have said gratitude, but gratitude seems to have an object to which you're grateful, and I don't think that's necessary. I think that that my value is to appreciate everything about the day, about nature, about the people in my life, about the good fortune of living when I do and being born in America, and just appreciating everything, the good and the bad. So that's my second one, and I'm only going to talk about the third one before I pass the microphone, sorry. And the third one is individual worth, and this is a definite keeper. When I was a young woman, it meant that I am worth something because everyone is worth something, so I should, you know that God knows my name, that I'm important to him, and that's what individual worth meant. To me now, it means that everyone is worth something. I'm going to cry about this, but it took me a while to get there and recognize that that birth isn't a meritocracy, that people aren't born rich or poor or of any different color or gender because of what they did in the pre-existence, that it's a lottery, but that every person, regardless of their gender, ethnicity, sexuality, is of the same individual worth.
Or you can hand that back down.
So in 2009, when I was ready to tell my parents and my family that I was leaving Mormonism, it had been 2 years since I actually left it, but I was sort of faking it till I could make it. I decided to do like the manifesto letter approach, you know, and write them 10 pages that I don't know how many of them would read all the way through. But toward the end, I made the point that I have certain values that stick with me from Mormonism and will continue with me after Mormonism, just to show them that certain things transcend religion anyway, and a lot of the good that Mormonism has, it can still be there maybe, but it might even be better in its own context. So with that as a setup, my number three is self-sustainability and change for the better. So I have kind of an entrepreneurial streak, and I just like all of the church stories of the, you know, in the early church especially, of people just working together to figure things out, making the best of their circumstances, you know, keeping track of their finances appropriately, you know, Bishop's Warehouse kind of stuff. I mean, I'm trying to make it Mormon, but it's not really Mormon anymore. Nowadays, this is just my way of saying, like, I really value independence. Maybe there's this libertarian streak in me or something, but just the fact that we're on this earth to make the best of it, so it's really up to us. It's what we want to make of it. So it's all you.
Okay. So I kind of cheated on this a little bit, too, because I couldn't think of just one thing for each of the three things, so it's kind of a compound thing. So I'm gonna compound a couple of values in something that I'm calling the Red Robin rule. And my mom's smiling a little bit because maybe she knows. She used to sing this song to me as a kid. Does anybody know? When the red robin goes bob, bob, bobbing along. And there's this song where it says, live, love, laugh, and be happy as part of that. And I think about, you know, everything that you said is super important, but like it comes down to, I shouldn't have said but. It comes down to me to that laughing and being happy is really one of the most important things to me, and as a value that I strive for. And I hope that's something that we've injected in the podcast as well, where the philosophies of men mingled with humor, trying to find the joy in situations. And sometimes it's really, really hard to find the joys in life, because life isn't always just fun and happy, but there are a lot of things that tickle me. So I that's my third, the live, love, laugh, and be happy, the red robin rule. And before we go to number two, I have a question just from what you were saying, Heather, about the first one with faith. So I this might be a little bit strong to say Heather hates faith.
Is that no?
Okay, so if you could, because I'm trying to think, if like, how are we able to build bridges if we have family and friends who hold faith as one of their most important values, their most important ideals, and for us we're just kind of like, good for them, but that's stupid, you know? Like how do we reconcile that? How do we do that? Like, is there a place for faith? Is faith just bad? Or
I think we can just talk about hope, because in the post-Mormon context, I don't see as much of a distinction as I used to. You know, there used to be a lot of sacrament talks that would try to parse them out. But I get the concept of hoping for a better future, or hoping things will work out. And you could say the same thing, having faith that a better future will happen, having faith that things will work out. So I don't like the word faith anymore, but I still think having a hope for better things in the future is a natural human condition.
But that's different, though. That's hope and optimism, whereas the Mormon version of faith is certainty. Credulity and belief in things without evidence. Yeah. And I sort of value the opposite.
Sometimes it's believing in things despite the evidence.
That's even a higher form of faith, right?
Right.
And so my way to reconcile it with people who still value the Mormon type of faith is coming down the list, down to number seven, is integrity. Even if I disagree with them, I can always respect the integrity with which people live. If they truly value faith and they are true to that, then I still find that respectable.
Right.
As you were talking, Bob, about hope, I was remembering a gospel doctrine lesson that I taught many, many years ago, where I was having a hard time talking about, you know, like, I know the church is true, mm-hmm. or something, and so I adopted that word, I hope. And man, I'm sure everybody here can understand how that went over. And, you know, somebody that came up to me afterwards and was talking to me about why that made him feel uncomfortable, because it just seemed so flimsy. Like, you couldn't really hold it. It wasn't a firm foundation.
Right.
You know? So I still don't quite know how to bridge that gap when...
Yeah, Mormons want it both ways, because even if you say faith, They're talking about knowledge. I know this, I know that. And then you say, no, but what about faith? Well, faith is knowledge. And then I come from the other angle and I say, well, faith is hope. And I don't know. It's make of it what you will. But I'm also with Heather in the fact that if there's no evidence, then I don't like that kind of faith. But I'm just trying to meet them halfway and say, hey, I can repurpose words too.
Okay. And any further comments on anything we said in round one or round three? No? Okay, let's go to the second one then, Randy.
My second one is compassion. There's before David Foster Wallace hung himself, he was just a brilliant author, but he suffered from clinical severe depression, so that's a tough one. But he gave a commencement speech that talked about the choice that we have to experience, because the natural tendency is we experience the universe like through from basically we're the center of the universe. Everything is happening to us. Everything is before us, after us, and he talks about choosing to see people in a different way, to try to have a little bit more compassion for for instance, in my line of work, a mom comes in and she's kind of rude and short and unreasonable. Instead of saying "what a bitch," you know. I know. I'm giving the example of what not to say.
Is that your value?
You know, which would be like a knee-jerk, asshole, sexist reaction. I just can't stop cussing. I'm sorry. Maybe imagine that, and it's probably as likely that she had a really long, rough day, and she has three young kids, and maybe she's single, and it's working at the same time, and if you imagine those kinds of things, it allows you to be more compassionate, it's important to me that if people experience me on a personal level, that it's a net positive. That's all I'm really shooting for. That allows me to screw up once in a while, but overall, I just want to be in something that, like, if somebody had to speak at my funeral, it would be a net positive experience for them. Not, it doesn't matter what they say, because your funeral, you're always going to say nice things. But it actually would be something that came from their heart. And it was my birthday. It's my birthday today, but my last day with my staff was a couple days ago, and they threw me a birthday party, and. I basically made a joke about being an asshole boss, and one of my employees says, no, Dr. Steiner, you care about people, and that was like the biggest compliment she could give. There's no other compliment I would have felt better about than no, you care about people, because at least it seems like I'm succeeding some of the time on my second value, compassion.
Happy birthday, Randy.
Yeah, I had to drop that in there.
Yeah. I guess my second value, which is weird because when I was thinking about this, a lot of my values haven't really changed much since I was a Mormon.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not that different.
Not a whole lot. Like, The golden rule was going to be my second one. Just good. Don't be a dick. Treat people like you want to be treated.
I don't think that's the golden rule.
It's the exact wording.
Yeah.
It's up for interpretation, I think. Yeah, right. That's pretty much it. I really do just live my life that way, but I've always been that way, so not much has changed. I was actually asking my wife earlier, would she think about my values? She's like, you really haven't changed much as far as values. You're pretty much pretty steady. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll take that.
Well, mine is an opposite one, though. So from number two, my post-Mormon value from the Mormon value, it's maybe the same thing, but it's the opposite of how it's maintained. So this sense of, Heather had it as one of hers, of individual worth, that sense of individual worth, but maintaining it and building it and achieving it through internally doing good things yourself as opposed to by putting other people down. So by saying you can, instead of saying I have the one and only truth, and therefore because you all don't have that, or by saying I did this or that more righteous thing and have more cred than you, right. You know, because you all have less cred, you know, or something like that. In other words, and so instead by having that sense of self and you know the love one another, but it's also as love self. So having that sense of self, but being able to know that because you have something that you value and you do and you appreciate and you find meaningful, that doesn't mean that you have to build that by putting other people down to do that. They could have something that is absolutely meaningful to them and is valuable to them and that kind of a thing. And so one of the ways that I've expressed that recently, and it kind of even applies to what you're talking about, how do you build bridges with people who are having a diametrically opposed epistemology to you and this kind of thing. So in Toronto, we have, as part of Community of Christ interfaith outreach that we do, we have a where we try to promote peace, we have a Encounter World Religions Week. And so because Toronto is the most diverse city in the world, we have every world religion possible. We have a religious studies professor who works for our Encounter World Religions Center, and he teaches you an hour and a half on everything related to Sikhism, the Sikhs. And then we go to the Sikh Gurdwara and we meet those guys. We learn about Buddhism, and we go to the Hare Krishna temple, we go to the Chinese Buddhist temple, all those kind of things. And in a lot of cases, when you go to go to the Sikhs and you love them, and they're wonderful and everything like that, you don't always have that same thing when we went to the Pentecostal mega church, or when I went to the mosque. You know, I have disagreements with a lot of the ways things were done. But on the other hand, when you actually understand their tradition and you go to their house, a place of worship, you share a meal with them, you get to understand them. You don't agree on several important values, but you have a place of understanding, so you're not just working out of biases and bigotry and saying what you have is false and what I have is true.
So the next one is knowledge, and it has something to do with what Randy was saying about skepticism, not the diatribe against that's wholly unfounded against Gwyneth Paltrow. My daughter's name is Gwyneth, so I have to take these things a little personally, even though she's not named after her. It's not unfortunate. Okay. Anyway, so knowledge, and I think that's such a keeper for me. It's totally different. I really enjoy the fact that I have more time because I'm not reading the scriptures to listen to philosophy podcasts and to listen to physics books and things. I really want to know, like, why do people believe the things that they believe? Who else has done that? Who else has, like, raise your hand if you're, like, replace the scriptures with things that you feel like you have learned more from and really enjoyed? So I want to know why people do the things they do. I want to know how this universe works. And mostly I want to know how we can construct a future that benefits everyone. The practical applications there. So knowledge, definitely a keeper. The next one was choice and accountability, and I'm a big fan of this. Raise your hand again if you listen to philosophy podcasts. Okay, I don't want to get into the like free will versus determinism debate over choice and accountability, because I don't think it matters that much. It's like, we all know that like atoms are mostly empty space, but I'm not going to therefore try to like put my head through this table hoping that the particles will miss each other because it's mostly empty space. It behooves me to act as though this is solid. I feel the same, like whether you wherever you fall on determinism, compatibilism, or free will, agentic free will, it behooves us all to act as though we are the authors of our own lives. And one of my favorite poems is by, what is his name, William Ernest Henley, Invictus, and it ends, "I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul." And that we should all, that everyone should act as though that they're running their lives. And they should cultivate self-discipline. And because you actually can cultivate it. All right, and then the other keeper after this one is good works. I think that's self-explanatory. Got to keep it in there.
Yay, twinners. Mine was knowledge, my second one.
All right.
So now I have to say something more original than what Heather just said. Yeah, I don't have a poem ready. No, I group this with experiencing the world. I like to seek out other people who are not like me and listen and try to learn from them. I don't want to get political, but both there and in other spheres of influence where there's a little more agreement. But after Mormonism and shifting the focus of a single source of truth being like the church office building and the hierarchy there and the scriptures and reading those materials over and over again and each time trying to find something new. Now I experience podcasts, which I didn't do before. I listen to books, which I didn't do before that weren't, more church approved. And I think that's a solid value to just, see beyond yourself. I come from this little Mormon context, which doesn't explain the world very well anymore. Not that anyone else has, the answers completely, but everybody has something to add and just listen and absorb more knowledge.
Cool. Okay, so mine, I've also condensed several ideas into a single phrase, and it's go blue. And that's not a pro BYU message by any means. So I'll explain what I mean by that. Several years ago, I was living in Japan. I was working for a medical device company. We were starting an office there, and the company in Asia was doing some leadership training. And I went to a course where there was a guy that represented a company called LSI, which is Leadership Skills Inventory, I think. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it or not.
Sounds made up.
Oh, it's absolutely made up. What is it? The main message, it had a circle, and there was a blue quadrant, not quadrant, but a blue section, a green section, a red section. And the red section was made up of aggressive management styles, aggressive ways to interact with people. And it was things like being oppositional. In certain situations, being very power-driven, being competitive, being like overly perfectionistic. Those were all red qualities. And then there was this green section, and green was all of these passive qualities, like avoiding anything, avoidance, dependence on other people, being very conventional and not straying outside of what's always been done. Being a seeker of approval. You're always looking for other people's approval in what you're doing. And I'll get to the blue in a second because that's the main point of this, but it was a self-evaluation survey, so you would answer a bunch of questions, kind of like a Myers-Briggs personality test, to see where you fall on the spectrum. And then there are also, you would be evaluated from your coworkers, people who worked for you, people who you reported to, so you would get this feedback from others as well, so you could kind of see where you fit. And what their research showed was that it didn't really matter how strong you were in any of these red or green areas. If you were strong in the blue areas, people would consider you a good leader or a good manager. And so the blue were all constructive styles, like being friendly, encouraging other people around you, being very achievement-focused and trying to get things done, being self-actualizing, which is magnifying your talents, magnifying your callings, maybe we'd call it in the church. So all of these constructive styles. And so it really made an impact on me. And I was really proud to see the areas where people thought that I was strong in those blue areas, and where I saw that I wasn't as strong, it gave me something to shoot for in that. But that was something that became a set of values for me, that it didn't come from the church. It was consistent with things that we learn in the church, but it really has helped me, not just during my time when I was there in Japan, but other areas in my life. I think it's helped in things that we've done together as a group. But that's something that's been really important to me. So I call that go blue, be blue. And as I did last time, I have one area where I'd like a little bit more clarification. And this time it's for you, Tom. It's about the golden rule. But don't look at me like I just stole something from you.
But you just said you did.
Okay, the golden rule, because I've been thinking about this. It's do unto others as you would have others do unto you. But, yeah. Okay.
That makes sense. Because when it's positive, then you start putting your values on other people.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with it. And there's this really silly story that I could tell from the MTC. I'm not going to tell it, but it just illustrates the point that not everybody wants what you want. And so, like, doing unto others as you would have done unto you, what if people don't want to be treated that way? They want to be treated another way. And so I just want to kick that out. How do you feel about that, Tom?
Great.
Why does that make you feel great, Tom?
Lots of good things make me feel great.
Yeah.
No.
Does that change anything of, like, you thinking about the golden rule, or are you just like, whatever?
Yeah, to a certain extent, it's hard for me to really articulate it, and I don't know. That's why I kind of started off by saying don't be a dick, and even to the point that you don't want to put your values on other people, you want to say you go the opposite way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think what was said about compassion and about knowledge, you know, the knowledge part is learning what other people want. The compassion is caring about what they want. And, you know, I think it can all blend together a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband calls that the platinum rule, do unto others as they would have done unto them.
Yeah.
But then he thinks it doesn't apply to parenting, because you sometimes have to do unto others as is best for them, whether they would want it or not.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So then it ties itself in knots.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, let's go then to our number one most important value of all time, Randy. What is it?
No superlative there.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say the negative construct of the golden rule, at least what it does is it prevents cruelty and harm. So it's definitely, to me, the better version of that. And anyway, my last first one. We had this problem with do we do number anyway. the last one is love. To me, love is the fuel of life. It's what makes, to me anyway, life worth living. I did a podcast a while back asking the question, am I truly happier now after leaving the church, or was I happier back in the fishbowl? And my conclusion was, I don't know. I always had a problem with how gleefully so many ex-Mormons talk about how wonderful and just perfect life is after they left the cult. And for me, there was a lot of comfort in having all the answers. Now I'm in this gigantic universe that's incomprehensibly huge. It's hard to not have an existential crisis once in a while. But what makes it all worthwhile is the love I have for all these people, for, you know, for my friends. I haven't cried in a long time talking. Oh man, the love I have for my wife and my kids. You know, when you're on your deathbed, you're not going to be saying, "Man, I just wish I'd made a little bit more money," or "Man, I wish I'd just worked a few more days a week and got ahead in life a little." You know, what you're going to want on your deathbed is the ones you love around, and so to me, it's not even close. Number one is love.
I got to follow that. My number one is pay it forward. And I was trying to think of how I was going to articulate this, because it wasn't even something that I thought about. It wasn't something I like tried to work towards. It just kind of happened. So I guess it was in 2011 is when this happened, when a really good friend of mine killed himself. And it was very unexpected, and it was extremely traumatic. He had four kids, and it was life-altering. And I started to go through the stages of grief, but with suicide, it's different, because you experience anger and frustration and even remorse internally, like, what could I have done? Instead of just going through the grief and the loss. And that was extremely hard on me. And I don't even remember how it happened, but I immediately started to go to a suicide support group, met a few people there, and then it was immediately after that I went and got certified and trained to be one of the callers on the suicide hotline. And I did that for about a year and a half. And it was really, really emotionally hard. But it was like something kept driving me to do it, because I kept feeling like that if I could just help someone not kill themselves, then it'll make it the next night easier to sleep. And it even kind of translated into the mixed faith support meeting that I'm doing with my wife, because I know how hard it is, and it's like I see the pain and I see the suffering. And it's like I kind of wish that someone was there for me. And I'm not blaming anybody for not being there for me, but if I can at least be there for someone else, that makes it easier for me to move forward and, I don't know, live better. It's hard for me to explain, because I don't really knock it up as like some sort of achievement. it's not something that I really necessarily aspired to. It was just something, and I even kind of credit my Mormon upbringing for it, that I just wanted to pay back. And even though I went through pain, I went through suffering, I wanted to be able to help others in some way, shape, or form. Because if I've experienced the pain and I know what it's like and I can actually empathize properly, then it's almost like I'm obligated to help. That's what it feels like. It feels like I'm obligated. Like, why would I not? If I went through this and I got on the other side, why would I not reach my hand into the abyss where someone's at and try to help them out of it?
Well, we didn't coordinate any of these ahead of time, and this is all like our surprises. We're all hearing it from each other.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was completely, you know, blown away here that Randy's top one wasn't cussing, and Tom's wasn't sighing. mine is actually complete. What I decided my top post-Mormon value is one that would have been completely unexpected for me way back when I first became an ex-Mormon as a teenager, because what I'm going to call it is community building and promoting community. And the reason why I say that is that when I first deconstructed Mormonism for myself and left, I just thought of myself, you know, like living in total isolation, and I pulled back from the community that I'd grown up in and everything like that, and I sat around and listened to Simon and Garfunkel, "I am a rock, I am an island," and I translated that into Latin and made that as the motto for my coat of arms, you know, all that kind of thing. I mean, that really is kind of where I felt like I was at. But ultimately, I think I've decided that, you know, humans are entirely social animals, where we build our own identities by our interaction with each other, and that no matter how much you think you could be living in your dorm room and just playing that song as loud as you want, you in fact are not a rock in an island. And so community is actually at the heart, I think, of one of the core things that is part of the Restoration tradition. But the thing I hated about community in my upbringing as a Mormon was this very sense of community as just oppressive conformity, and community as obedience to hierarchy. And so that's what I identified with community, and that's one of the reasons why I think I just wanted to chop it off and have nothing to do with that. But later in life, as I grew up and matured, as I experienced other communities, I found the value of things like Sunstone. You know, and so when I encountered this community, Sunstone, I found it to be so amazing and powerful that I wanted to, volunteer time for it. And I've coordinated and several regional Sunstones as as a way to help promote that. Or I ended up being the president of the John Whitmer Historical Association and other charities and things like that, with the idea of, and this podcast, and our virtual communities that we make. And so in that way, I don't value communities that are conformist or hierarchical, but I do value this idea of, as we are individuals, we are engaging in community to then promote broader, all these broader changes of all these values, promoting increasing knowledge and wisdom, peace and justice, all of these kind of things that we're doing together in societies through tinier communities that have their waves outward, as opposed to what we can do just cut off as an individual.
So mine aren't ranked. I just, again, did the Young Women Value. So,
sure they are.
So we talked about integrity, a total keeper, be reliable, keep your promises, be the person you say you are, don't be a hypocrite. So scoring at home, ladies, what's the last one?
Virtue,
right, which is new in the last 10 years, and it's a euphemism for chastity. That's all it means. It's not a broader, goodness or anything. It's just chastity. So I thought this was the perfect one to replace with pleasure, which is the other twin pillar of happiness, purpose and pleasure. And pleasure used to be such like a dirty word when I was a Mormon. It was like not nearly as great as purpose, and it was selfish and probably get you at least into the celestial kingdom, if not worse. So this one, I'm going to throw out virtue and put in pleasure, and that means, enjoyment of everything, whether it's food or sex or literature or sports or gardening or whatever it is you're into. We all need pleasure to be happy, and that's just part of being a human. There's no shame in it. And I'm not saying that's my top value, although it's coming out this way, but I believe in pleasure.
All right, I'm again not super original because, the word love, it's hard to beat, right? But I'll at least try to give it some context from, my interpretation of it post-Mormon state. I don't think of love as a zero-sum game. Maybe it's weird to say, but I typically think of myself as loving everyone that I meet and that I interact with. That's like my default stance is pleasant exchanges with people matter, and I get something from them. I hope they get something from me. Certainly, my family, my wife and my son are at the center of my universe, but that doesn't mean that as I interact with people on an everyday basis that I don't strive to project my love of the common human condition and humanity in general in the way I interact with them. So that's something I try to also, paradoxically, as a very selfish person, I try to remember that value is something that I'm always striving for.
All right. Once again, I'm grouping several things into one word, and it's not as good as anything that you guys said. But it's balance. And thinking about what am I going to say about balance? we've got the next Star Wars movie coming out in December, and Luke Skywalker in the trailers has said that the Jedi have to end. So there's all this speculation that the the light side of the force went too far to one extreme, and the dark side of the force went too far to one extreme. So there's going to be the birth of these gray Jedi that have balance. I think that's kind of what I'm going for, and it's almost like I think of this as being my top value, kind of akin to if a genie says you get three wishes, that your first wish is, oh, I wish for 1,000,000 wishes, you know, something. Because I could take all of the different values that we've talked about and say it could go to one extreme in this direction, or it could go in one extreme to this direction. And first of all, like, I want to explore what those are so that I know what it is and never stop exploring. So maybe that feeds into what you talked about with knowledge. But to just find some kind of balance to that. And I'll share an experience that I had that was probably the most traumatic experience that I've ever been through. How I reacted to it in one way, and then years later started questioning, was that the right way to react, kind of this back and forth, and still seeking for balance in it. But 6 years ago, I was going in the process of going through a divorce, and my wife and I got into, or my ex-wife and I got into a very heated discussion one night, and she thought, oh, well, this is a good opportunity to call the police on him and get him arrested, so when people see that we're divorced, they say, oh, it's because he was abusive. So it was this total baloney reason, but it was effective. The police came to the house, they talked to me, they put me in cuffs, I spent 24 hours in jail. All I had was my garment tops on, and, you know, it was a traumatic experience. And being in this, it would have been better if it was like solitary confinement, but it wasn't. It was like a drunk tank. And so for 24 hours, there were different people that were coming in. Or there were these kids that came in that had been in some kind of a heroin house, and they had fungus on their toenails. And there was another big, big, burly guy, a head taller than me, that he didn't like me. And he said, you know, I could smash your head into the wall right now and give you an extra day or two in here. How would you like that? And, you know, it was a horrible experience. And as I'm going through this, I'm thinking about my ex-wife and how can I get back at her? Like, what can I do? I was so, like, angry and just, like, shamed and, you know, all of these. I was just thinking these very vengeful thoughts and really petty things that I could do to get back at her. And I didn't like how that felt. That's not the kind of person that I am. And so I found my inner Jedi and tried to find a state of peacefulness and calm and just, okay, any angry thoughts, any vengeful thoughts, I'm just going to let those go. And ended up, you know, from that point, it was like the end of a 17-year marriage that I'd been hoping we could reconcile, even though it wasn't a great marriage. I wanted to stay together for the kids and for other reasons, but at this point I realized there's no salvaging this. And so for that, it was a good thing. But I made the choice not to be vindictive or angry, and I ended up, in the process of having a quick and easy divorce, I think not really fighting for things that I should have fought for, that now years later, just for the sake of having it quick and easy and trying to avoid any kind of anger in myself, that I didn't really stand up for myself. So that's kind of how I was at the time. And I don't know if I can really make this connection or not, but I've been thinking a lot about the message that we get with the story of the atonement and who Jesus was as this all-powerful deity who comes to earth, and in his final hours he's beaten and he's stabbed, and you know the whole story, he's crucified, and at any point this all-powerful deity could have said stop it, but he didn't. He let himself be beaten. He let himself be put in this awful position. And that was my that was my standard that I held on to, that I looked to and really informed, I think, those decisions that I made as I was in this jail cell thinking, okay, no, if Jesus can let himself be beaten up, I can let myself be beaten up. And so I wondered, is that really the best value? And does that just make us more amenable to coercion, that we have these stories in the Book of Mormon of the anti-Nephi Lehis who say, oh, I'm not going to fight at all. I've made this covenant. I buried my arms. And then when they're attacked
instead of standing up for themselves and fighting for themselves, they just lay down on the ground and allow themselves to be slaughtered. And we say, wow, weren't they awesome? Weren't they great? So having now, you know, a post-Mormon look at that, I'm really questioning, what role did those stories and the morals of those stories play in my life? And so maybe that's an area where I don't want to go all the way over to, now I'm going to be the asshole who, you know, I'm going to be vengeful. I still don't feel comfortable with that, but maybe I need to go further and, like, stand up for myself and defend myself and not just allow myself to be trodden over and abused because Jesus did and I'm trying to be like Jesus. So that's kind of what I'm going for with balance. And now I feel really awkward. But I want to ask a question about love. And I think it ties in with what I just said, actually. Because Jesus said, love your enemies. Do you agree with that, Randy? Is that something that we can do or should do or even how to do? And if so, how could you love Donald Trump?
No, you must defeat your enemies.
You must defeat your enemies, yeah.
Love your enemies. I don't know. I think that's...
But if like, love is the highest standard, like, where do you draw the line that love is okay in these places but not okay? Do you do that, or is it love for everyone, like...
To quote Homer Simpson, what's that religion that has all of those idealistic values but don't really work out in real life? Christianity? That's the one. love your enemies. I think... come on, love your enemies. Someone who's actively trying to destroy your life, love them. Jesus. No, I don't think that's a requirement or advisable. But I think don't allow yourself to be consumed by hate of your enemies is something that's a little bit more realistic, attainable, and leads to better chance of mental health.
How's that going for you, Trump?
I don't. I mean, Trump's just, it's hard. He's so dumb. I'm consumed about what he can do. You know,
stay on target.
Yeah, anyway. Does anyone here love their enemies?
No, I think of it differently. Take stock of why you have enemies, how many you have. Is it really a thing that you need to, you know, focus on? Do you take
time? Is it them or is it you?
Well, if you're really preoccupied, it could be something you could work on from a different angle. I don't think in the abstract we all have to say 100% I love everyone, even though theoretically all these enemies that, I mean, it's one of those games you play to have a good soundbite, but I don't think you need to worry about your enemies as much as loving the other, I'm going to make up a number, 95% of the people in the world. So maybe start there is how can you better, you know, rather than focus on how not to do the tiny thing, how can you better do the thing that you're hopefully doing with the vast majority of humanity? Anyone else?
Little non sequitur. So Jake couldn't be here because he has a little baby. But so he also didn't understand the assignment. He said the number one Exmo value is bragging about drug use.
So. Clearly did not understand.
He didn't know we're going to be all serious and crying and bearing our testimonies.
That's right.
So why is this panel so not funny?
Yeah, Glenn.
I don't know. So I just want to go back to the loving your enemies thing because as I was driving up with Craig Keeling, who's in the back there and does the infant artwork for us, and it's so awesome. Way to go, Craig.
Yeah, Craig.
We were talking about this presentation and bouncing some ideas off of each other, and remind me the name of the guy. We listened to his interview on the podcast. It was Daryl Davis. Daryl Davis. Does anybody in here know who Daryl Davis is? I didn't. Yeah. So one person. I didn't know who he was before Craig told me about it. This is a guy. He's a musician. He's black. He befriended a guy. What was he? Was like a grand dragon, or he became a grand dragon in the KKK. They like became very good friends. It's weird. And
it took years and years and years of them getting to know each other until this KKK guy finally said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And he gave him his cloak and his cowl, and he retired from the KKK. And then it happened with another guy who was in the KKK. And it happened with another guy who was in the KKK. And so Daryl Davis was explaining on this podcast, what's the name of the podcast?
Love and Radio.
Love and Radio. It was a really interesting story to listen to. And he explained at the end that people would come up to him and say, why are you making friends with these people? You're validating what they're doing by even associating with them, because then they can point to you and say, look, this guy doesn't have a problem with what we're doing, so it's all right. And Daryl's response to that was, hey, I've got 3 retired KKK cloaks and shawls in my closet. How many do you have? And it was a struggle for me to listen to that, but it was really, really moving as well. And you know, kind of feeding this question of, is that showing love? Is that showing friendship? And on both sides, they're learning more about each other. They are building bridges. How effective is that on a large scale? I don't know. It worked in this one case. He put himself in harm's way all the time to do this. But it was a really touching story. So it's what has informed this, and probably why this isn't that funny, John.
Jake had just texted me another addition. Bringing up swinging with your spouse, because isn't it so crazy that people would do that? And I would never do that, but what do you think about it? I mean, maybe it's not so bad that not that I'd ever do it, but what do you think?
That's a quote?
Yeah, exactly.
Is he propositioning you, Heather?
Oh, that's old news. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. All right.
All right, so do any of you have any final comments before we open it up to Q&A?
Yeah, this would have been a lot funnier with Jake.
Yeah.
Any final I had to come up with final comments?
Yeah, you don't have to. I'm just asking if you do.
Oh, God. Final comments.
I love comedy. It was my number 4, but I was following the rules, so.
Okay. Final. All right. Well, I think that's our presentation then. Is there questions that any of you have for us?
I don't want another round. Any questions? No questions? All right.
We can also have questions about anything about the podcast that don't relate to our values.
Sure.
This is a comment, but I'd be happy to hear your response. I always feel like, I don't live by this, but that philosophically my top value is kindness. That compassion is really too much to ask for me, but if I act in kindness, regardless of how I feel toward the purpose, and if, of course, ideally everyone on the planet would do that, you can have your own private emotions and preferences and I harbor my private hates, but if I can still act kindly toward everyone, including my enemies, that might be doable and would be sufficient.
Yeah, totally agree.
And that reminds me, one of the things that I had prepared to share, and I don't have it as a visual, so it might not be as effective, but we did a survey a couple of months ago about values and had several, couple hundred listeners respond to that. And the way that the survey was structured, they were given 6 different values. Kindness, integrity, liberty, fairness, health, like personal health and well-being, and respect, specifically respect for other cultures and other belief systems. And I asked them to rank each one, which of those 6 was most important to them. And the results were interesting to look at, but they validate what you just said. Kindness was overwhelmingly the number one most important value for at least the people that were responding to our survey.
So we were all wrong.
Not really. I don't know that we were wrong. Okay. Integrity was the second most important. Liberty was the third.
Fairness was the fourth. And then at the very bottom, like barely getting any votes at all, was health, which was kind of strange to me. But maybe it wasn't defined as well. And then just below that was respect for other cultures and other beliefs. But given the constraints of the questioning, that those were the results. Yeah.
Now that you're podcasting kind of more intermittently, I find myself, okay, well, I better just say thank you first. I have to some of you already. But you made a really big impact on a person who really felt alone. And to hear you laughing about things that were really oppressively weighing down on me, I felt like I was under the foot of an iron boot. And you changed my life. You really did pay it forward, just laughing on a podcast. But I love hearing when you guys recommend other books, other podcasts. If you could each maybe say some, if you listen to podcasts that affect you, maybe I can move on from listening to Mormon-only podcasts, you know, and listen to some that interest you guys too.
Sure. Randy, you want to start?
Start what? Podcasts that you're looking for? Podcast recommendations.
Yeah.
SGU. Skeptics Guide to the Universe. Partially Examined Life. Okay, I won't do any overlap ones then.
Rick and Morty. It's not a podcast, but Rick and Morty is like the thing that you're.
Wubba lubba dub dub. Yeah, just okay. If you haven't watched Rick and Morty, you gotta watch Rick and Morty. And if you do watch Rick and Morty, don't forget season premiere. It's tomorrow. Let's see. Okay, I'm going through my list. No, I want to list them all. You're going to hear, man. You're going to hear it all. Okay. Okay, this one's really, really good. Anyone a fan of Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah.
He's got a podcast. He's in the middle of season two. He's dealing a lot this season with the racial issues in America. And I was getting there.
You're listing like how many more after this one?
I really like this podcast. It's only 30 minutes. I wish it was an hour. It's so good that after 30 minutes, you feel like you're dying for more. So Partially Examined Life. And a really cute podcast by a couple of cute atheist ex-Mormons who really left early and don't know as much about Mormonism as we do. But they're really good. It's called Thank God I'm Atheist. Frank and Dan, and they live right here in Salt Lake. There's others. Man, this is killing me.
Are you writing this down?
I didn't think I'd ever get a chance. Podcasts, I'll try to not steal, but Waking Up by Sam Harris is probably my favorite.
God damn it.
Sorry, it's the way the order goes. I also, let me look.
Hardcore history.
The Joe Rogan Experience. That's one of my favorites. And, of course, they're really, really long, but they're really, really good. And then You Are Not So Smart.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. But books, I'm going to go a little fiction. David Wong, he's the one that does John Dies at the End. I really, really enjoyed that. And Ready Player One. That was a recent one that I listened to. I think they put a trailer out for that. They're going to do a movie on Ready Player One, which is really, really great. So, there you go.
Well, so I sort of famously don't listen to podcasts.
Especially ours.
Including ours. And so I had trouble just because I don't like to listen to me talking and all that kind of thing. But anyway, what I do listen to and what my phone is completely filled with is the Great Courses series, mm-hmm. a teaching company. And so it's just every range of all the university courses, all the university professors, and they're just talking on these. And so I pretty much am listening to that every day. So one, and again, every topic, they're wonderful.
So, yeah, so you just kind of went through all of my podcasts here. But you didn't, one that I really, really love that maybe you haven't heard of is Very Bad Wizards, which is a quote from The Wizard of Oz. And it's a philosophy professor and a psychology professor. And they're a little off color, but not, I mean, if you can handle Infants on Thrones, you can totally handle it. So, Very Bad Wizards.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would just put another plus one for Sam Harris and Joe Rogan, and then I'd say Death, Sex, and Money is pretty good. Podcast about talking about awkward subjects, which I find enjoyable for some reason.
And I really don't listen to podcasts because I'm too busy making this one. but I love audiobooks. And really, like, when I go for walks, if I'm not listening to an audiobook, I'm listening to something that we've done and thinking, how are we going to present this? But I'm listening to two audiobooks right now that I really love. One is Homo Deus, and I forget the name of the author, but it's okay. I'm not going to try and say it, but yeah. And it's a follow-up to Sapiens, right? It's the follow-up to that book. And then Al Franken, Giant of the Senate, is just a fantastic book. But I grew up on Saturday Night Live, was, you know, next to Mormonism, it was Saturday Night Live right there. And so hearing Al Franken talk about his transition from being a satirist and a comedian to becoming a U.S. senator is fascinating. So those are things that I would recommend.
Jake just texted his third Mormon value, which four of you are living, next Mormon value is tank tops.
So I'm fresh in my faith transition. Started listening to your podcast about 8 months ago or so when I met John, and it's meant a lot. Something I'm curious about is, because you've had more time on this journey, or you have more distance in this world that I'm still very new. It's a new world. But instead of the arc of Mormon to post-Mormon, I'm curious if there are things you thought were really helpful or enlightening or something when you were fresh in the transition, kind of early on, trying to rebuild your world, that now that you have a little bit more time out, you've maybe cooled off on a little bit, and you kind of were like, oh, that was really hot because I was just so hungry for so much. But, you know, a few years out, maybe it doesn't do something else. And instead of just focusing on something negative, you could maybe say a band, too, that you like.
I would say just something quick comes to mind. Grant Palmer's book, Insider's View, that was really instrumental for me leaving the church. But now I don't give a shit about the Book of Mormon, so it doesn't really mean anything. But back then, it was a huge deal. I don't know if that was what you were going for, something that was like, is that what you asked? It's like something that really was meaningful.
That meant a lot to you before.
Yeah.
But not necessarily Mormon.
Oh, okay.
Give me other.
Got it. You answer it better.
I do? I don't know. What I was thinking as you were talking, and I don't know this is what you're going for or not, but I think when people start going through that process of leaving the church, there's a lot of anger a lot of times and feeling like I was lied to. And I never really felt that I was lied to because I because of my background in cultural anthropology and folklore, and recognizing that just because somebody is telling you something that they learned and believed to be true that isn't true, it's not really the same as a lie. And so I don't know if that's helpful to people or not. It was helpful to me to not be angry. But again, I don't like living in a place of anger, so maybe I should have taken that in more. I don't know. But recognizing that the things that were taught inside of Mormonism they have a very useful function for what Mormonism is and what Mormonism does, and things that it does actually very well.
So that helped me not be so angry, and I don't know if that is what you were looking for or not, but yeah. Anybody else?
It's just been a clean arc.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Okay. Andrew.
Okay, so this is going to be a very serious question. At the beginning, you mentioned that recently there's been some issues in the podcasting world with, some things relating finances and that infants may be entering that world. So what can we expect the Patreon funds to go to? Will it be a laptop, a trip to, a fancy location, the ability for one of you or all of you to quit your day jobs to commit to this effort? What can we expect?
Boy, that would be awesome if that happened. That would be really, really great. It was things that we struggled with, and we've talked about monetization for a long time and how would we approach it if we ever really approached it. So the first thing that we did was try to figure out an equal way, like a fair way to split it up between the nine of us. It's still kind of a work in progress to see how it works, but trying to do it based on the amount of time that each of us put into it and different roles that we play so that we're all comfortable with what it is that we're getting as it comes in. And what we spend it on is up to us. So it's really more like we've got certain fixed costs for running the podcast, and in the past, Bob has just fronted that. He's just like, I'll pay for all the server stuff and everything there. We recently upgraded to a better system. And so the first thing that happens every month when we get money that comes in from Patreon is we pay for our expenses. And then we set a little bit aside for kind of like a rainy day fund, or if we ever do we go out to dinner, we have things like that. And then we take the rest of it and split it up, and there you go. So if you want to spend it on a laptop, if you want to put it towards your kids' education, if you want to buy food with it because you've lost your job, we're free to do that. And what we wanted to make sure in monetizing, we didn't want to do anything where we like took our back catalog and put it behind a paywall and say, now anybody who's coming into Infants on Thrones has to pay to hear anything that we did. We didn't want to slow down any of the episodes that we're putting out to people who aren't going to pay for it, but we wanted to provide a reason for people, because people have said to us over the years that they'd like to support us, and we've just been really resistant to it, and so provide a way to do that, and also provide extra value on top of what we're already doing. And the thing that we've only been doing Patreon for a little over a month. But it really has re-energized me particularly to see, and maybe I should back up, because several months ago there was an episode called Check Up from the Neck Up where several of us talked about the fatigue that we feel talking about Mormonism, and we've been doing this for 5 years, and how much longer do we have to go? And so we sent out another survey and got responses back, and the overwhelming response was, if you guys have to call it quits, we understand. Thank you for what you've done, but please don't call it quits, because what you've done is important to us, and we still enjoy it, and we want you to keep going. And in fact, if you could have two episodes a week, we'd want you to do two episodes a week, or three episodes a week. We'd love you to give us more. And if you get tired of talking about Mormonism, talk about other things. But don't stop, please, but if you have to, go ahead. And so Patreon kind of came around at that same time that we were wondering, how are we going to do this, keep going? And having a group of people that can join, and if you don't know what Patreon is, if you think about it like a private Facebook group, that now we know who our core audience is that really supports us, and we have a lot of communication back and forth on Patreon. And that's really encouraging, and it generates ideas. So one of the things that we started doing, we've only done it once, we're going to do it again a week from tomorrow, is the first Sunday of every month, we're doing a fast and testimony hangout session where Patreon subscribers can join us, and we just have a conversation. A week from tomorrow, we're going to read a screenplay live like we did before, and so people can listen to that. But the last time we did this, just talking to listeners generated a lot of ideas for future content and re-energized, oh yeah, we haven't talked about everything that there is to talk about, and we have a unique style, and there's a brand of Infants on Thrones that we can continue to do. And you know, so Jake, earlier this week, there was a podcast that we did, I think last December, where we started making this joke about hard-ass Jesus. And then Jake became, you know, hard-ass Jesus, and we started putting things to him to, hey, what about this situation, hard-ass Jesus? And he would, you know, give his ruling. And so we thought, Jake's like, what if I develop that into a character like Carl the Casual Satanist or something like that? And we have people that ask us questions, and you get an answer from hard-ass Jesus. And so, again, Craig Keeling brilliantly was able to help us create this picture that, if you haven't seen it already, it's on the table back there, and several of you have already contributed asking questions to hard-ass Jesus. We'll get responses to that. So there's new things that are being created, and that's where we're going with it. And hopefully the money part won't become a problem or an issue with it. And we never want to do something where we're forcing anybody to have to do this. We'll keep doing what we've been doing, and the only difference that people might have is that they'll hear us talk about it and try to promote and push people to Patreon, and if that annoys them, well, that annoys them. But you know, it's been a really good experience, and Bill Real has been great because we've been doing this back and forth.
It's Primer, right?
Primer on the Mormon Primer. Yes, it's Primer. Going back and forth on this, it's been a lot of fun. So I'm encouraged that it's going to help us keep going for a lot longer. And if it does ever become something where we can quit our day jobs and do it full time, yeah, it never will. But that would be awesome. Anybody else want to say? I spewed that out. I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we're done. But thank you guys for coming.
Yeah, thanks.
Really, really appreciate it.